Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
I'm not the least prepared person here, so.
I am.
That was aimed at you.
Yes, thank you. All right.
Welcome you. You don't know what he's going to say.
Welcome you. We have all of James, but we have just some of early James, and we have Cammy. Monk here.
We have all of early James, we just don't have all of the latest.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
That's still just the latest, though. That's how it works.
It's the latest version of it, right?
That's all I'm encompassing.
Is that it?
That's why the band name works so well.
I like it. You know,
yeah, but the latest part came later. It was like, oh, early, dude, like, the shittiest drummer I've ever had, he came up with the name. And, you know, no names.
Devontae, Devontae is not you.
He told me brushes were gay. Can we just put him into that territory of bad drummer? No. Even though he loved Dave Brubeck. He gets stoned and listened to Dave Brubeck. But when I would ask him to play with brushes, he'd be like, oh, brushes are gay, dude.
Okay. You know what I love? Well,
you're
like,
fired.
Like, with everything that has happened, like in the past 2 weeks, with like the stonk market, with like Wall Street and all that. Did y'all see like someone on the internet, and God only knows, is like thank you for those weird some bitches out there on the internet. It was they did the stonk wars, like in Star Wars, where it was like the rolling,
oh, no.
rolling paddle, and it was like. Stonk Wars, the gay bears assemble. And I was like, why are we calling them gay bears?
Wait,
no one decides the rules. The stonks decide the rules.
Yes. And so, yes, we are allowed to laugh at that because no one created those rules.
Yeah. Stonks did.
Yeah. All right, let's open this thing up. So we're all drinking different things. It's Untapped in Vinyl Nature to talk about the beer that we're drinking on, and
we're all drinking something different, I think.
There's one thing that Monk always tells me when I drink a White Claw. He said that the Beastie Boys did not fight for our right to party for you to drink a White Claw.
Have you tried it?
I've actually had one, and it's not bad. I'm not hating on it, and I'm not hating on anybody drinking it. I've got to be a craft beer nerd. Yeah. And so,
I was a staunch IPA drinker, and James's sister, it's her fault.
Oh, no.
She got him on the White Claw, and
it was really just there.
Hey, I'm having, with this one beer, I'm having bullshit. Like 900 calories. You're having 100, so props to you.
No,
I mean,
no,
I'm...
No, that's... Yeah, no shit, like, first time we hung out. Yeah. When we done the your podcast, that was the first White Claw I had ever had.
Were we drinking White Claw that day?
Yes.
It's COVID. Everybody's doing
COVID
bullshit.
Requires White Claw. Where were you? Didn't get the email?
Trying to stay hydrated.
Yeah, I guess so.
You were busy flying the spaceship, Ford.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I must have been really drunk because I don't remember White Claws at all. Well,
yeah, because you were drunk. How do you think you got that drunk?
Well, you know, when you go to Zach's house, especially during rehearsals, they pull out all kinds of shit. Last night, they grabbed a bottle of some green. It tasted like Jolly Rancher. It was actually quite delicious.
What's that?
It's like a malt liquor.
I just noticed a poster on your wall is also on my wall.
The Banditos?
My roommate, Zach Austin, and Shallow Martin opened.
Yeah, that's who I was just talking about.
There you go.
This is a great show.
Nothing caps what's over your fireplace, though, in that home.
We're not going to talk about that.
We did a really good Christmas gift. Our friend, yeah.
That's fine.
Okay, I guess we're talking.
Yeah. There you go.
And so, like, since Adrian's not here, I'll be Adrian. And I'll go ahead and bring up little boy butts.
Okay.
Oh, no.
God damn it.
We're 5 minutes into this conversation.
Somebody's going to do it.
I don't even know where that trend started.
Well,
certainly didn't start with him. It started with someone probably in jail. and maybe that's where Adrian's headed. You know, I don't know. But long story short, above our mantle and mine and Zach Austin and Daniel Rand's house, there is an almost nude photo of Adrian Marmolejo.
No, he's nude.
Almost not. Cowboy.
Yeah, he's new. He's just got the hat perfectly placed.
Yeah. But he's got the good beard, too.
He's such a damn gem, that Adrian.
He's so fucking photogenic.
Yeah.
Really is. Let's move on. all right. So each of you, it's first time in Possum Town. Welcome to the friendly city of Columbus. Yeah. Thoughts, poetry, sermons.
Well, you guys just had a show.
This just reminds me of, you said poetry. the first time Chad Atkins was ever on Johnny Cash's TV show, Johnny Cash wrote a poem to talk about Chad Atkins, and it was the weirdest. It's like 2 minutes. Y'all have to go look this up now.
Yeah.
It's 2 minutes of Johnny Cash quietly in his... in his super deep voice, just like, and the lightning fingers of Chester Atkins, Mr. Guitar. And it's just like, let the man play!
Y'all know what happened just down the road on 92? Starville.
Right when we got...
Okay, so if you were to keep on heading west, like you wanted to go to California from here, you would end up in Starville.
That's the Johnny Cash song, the Starkville
City Jail.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a really good song.
So
he was picking flowers. That's all he was doing.
Pretty cool story. I was hanging.
Probably fucked up.
When I was picking
flowers
back in the early '90s, I lived over in Starkville, and my good friend John Copeland, we were riding one day, and he goes, "That right there is my grandma's house. She's the one that called the cops on Johnny Cash for picking flowers in her front yard."
And
I was like, "Oh my God, are you fucking serious?" And he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Yeah, he wrote a song about her, I think." And I was like, "No, he fucking did, because it's on that record, which San Quentin or Folsom Prison, whichever one."
The best part about that San Quentin live record is he does San Quentin twice because they love it.
Yeah,
so I've got that record.
Can we talk about the graveyard and the flowers that I have?
I mean, now we have to.
You know, come on, Cammy.
Open the door. Come on now.
No, I'm in trouble.
We're talking about graveyards. There's this this graveyard that overlooks. We had just done like a Recording King session after I'd gotten a resonator, the Swamp Dog resonator that Recording King gave me. Which I played tonight, and on the way back, we stopped at a Pilot gas station, and I'm not exactly sure, it's between Nashville, Tennessee, and Birmingham, Alabama, on 65.
Somewhere. I'm upset. There's a graveyard.
And this Pilot gas station is the one directly adjacent.
The big titty billboard? Right off the interstate.
It's like between 60, like Birmingham and Nashville. What is that? And there's a graveyard.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
I do know.
You know my favorite billboard is
it's like
Alabama.
A strip club right
Booty
next
bungalow.
To. There you go,
oh,
Booty
no,
Bungalow.
That's the other way. That's
not that I've ever been in.
That's the other way.
I know that.
But then, no.
I think it's closed now.
That's. Is Booby Bungalow
damn
was
COVID.
Closed? God, I never got a chance to go.
Farm man's daughter.
And it's next to the truck stop with the big chicken. The shady lawn.
Long story short,
where do we go wrong on that?
Extra long story, a little bit not as long. We stop at this gas station, fill up in like, yeah, it's like
The graveyard's very well kept. That's the thing, is I stopped there. Because you see a graveyard beside the interstate, and you're like, oh my God, how the fuck does that happen?
You know, actually...
And so you expect to go and for it to be all decrepit, but it's like there's people that actually keep it. But so we revisited
it. It's probably like 1 a.m. at this point.
It was very late. It's a trucker's like graveyard. It's probably like 3 or 4 a.m. at this point.
And we kind of just wander out into this graveyard, and we see like an SUV parked.
Person, yeah.
And,
I think his last name was Hyatt, because I kept thinking about Lily Hyatt.
I need to know his full
Hyatt.
Name.
He said Hyatt, huh?
I need to know his full name.
No relation to Lily Hyatt, but...
we walk up on him, and he's quietly... unfortunately, we disturbed him, but he was...
Popping
he was
his
just
dentures
looking,
out.
He was looking at his mother's grave.
He was popping his dentures out.
Yeah, but...
He's like, excuse me, I'm taking my dentures out. I was like, do what you need to do. We walked up on you.
And he's looking at his mother's grave. And his uncle is buried next to his mother.
Yeah.
And he hates it. Like, it was promised to him. He was supposed to be buried next to his mother. And... this guy is clearly, you know, he's extremely effeminate, which I don't fucking care about, but, like, it's just, like, it's almost like I'm putting together that this guy is being ostracized from his family, and he doesn't really realize it, because maybe he's not...
No, he does. He just
maybe he's not even gay, but, like, they don't like him because his voice is different or something, and they're, like... they gave this gravesite next to his mother
to
her
uncle.
Brother.
Yeah. And he's...
No, I think it was somebody more obscure than that, though. No, it wasn't... It was something that it didn't
They gave
didn't
it to, like, the
right.
fucking weird cousin or something.
Yeah,
that's how it felt being delivered
like,
from him.
Because you were just, like, it was... He was talking about it, and you were just like, dude, fuck them, like...
Yeah, we were all on his
y'all were
side.
Like team him, right?
Yeah, he was trying to give us whiskey, and I was like, eh, it's COVID. Like, it's COVID. I love this whiskey, but
he had nowhere else to go. Like, it was the Christmas because he had all the lights in his car, and like we walked up, and he was listening to music, and like we were just like,
it was
hey,
an extremely profound, sad moment to just.
But he wasn't
join.
Sad.
I,
that was the cool part.
Maybe
like
he didn't know he was sad. I don't know.
Well, but no,
was,
but he was finding...
He was just high enough.
Yeah.
I'm really, really proud of us for not drinking that whiskey.
I was so tempted.
Drinking that COVID
yeah, I'm
whiskey.
Telling you, yeah.
Such a fucking... Oh, he was awesome. Yeah.
It's weird living in this time, and like we're over a year of it now, you know.
Pour one
like,
out for a homie.
Yeah, no kidding, yeah. Pour one out for that.
Well, but I have the flowers in my front yard there, because there were some about to like tumble
she stole.
Off
she
of,
stole some.
You did that.
You did that.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
He said
you stole the fake flowers off of a grave.
No, they had blown down by the fence,
okay.
by the truck.
Well played. Well played.
We made it all right here, okay? There was no theft of flowers.
I wanted to write a song about the guy.
They're way more vibrant now, though, that they're on my front fence. I was, like, looking at them. I thought they looked better.
Oh, so the whole time I was thinking they were fake flowers.
They are fake flowers. But I thought
they
were...
But you said they had grown?
But
what?
No, but you know...
More vibrant?
They are more vibrant now than I thought. They were more decrepit
because they're just not laying idle in a cemetery.
Yeah, but they had definitely blown off and ruined.
I got you.
I didn't steal them off a grave. That would be rude.
Guys, I want to ask you this.
Shit happens. They blow off all the time.
Is first time in Columbus. What are I mean, I don't know how much you got to experience of it, like
that,
coming in.
It might not be.
Is like, we don't have an awful lot here. Like, if you had some time during the day, you could go just that way, more south in the downtown, and you could see some of the antebellum homes. And we have Tennessee Williams' house. We have Catfish Alley just right there.
There.
Where's the water?
In the refrigerator.
No, the
oh. three blocks, wall? 3 blocks over. Yeah, 3 blocks it's just over. There.
Y'all just went in two different
directions. The tin top. No, I live here, so I know, like, it's right there.
Okay.
Yeah. And Tennessee Williams' house is right there, like a block over. The house, he wasn't actually born in the house. He was born in the hospital, but he was brought there the second day of life and was raised there. His father, his grandfather was the rector at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. And so he was raised in that house for the first year of his life, and then they moved away to wherever they moved away to. But the river is 3 blocks that way.
Mm-hmm. So
can we go?
You can. We can.
Mobile
yes.
unit. Can we?
Yes.
Let's just pick the mics up and just walk.
I mean, just
Tennessee
awesome.
Williams guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a great playwriter.
Do you not know Tennessee Williams? Or are you just fucking with me?
I've heard he was good at what he did.
Yes. Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is the only thing I've ever read. I've saw more of the movies, I guess, than I ever. I don't. I honestly don't give a shit.
The thing.
It sounds totally like it, doesn't it? Yeah. It
sounds like he knew his way around a pedal steel.
Yeah. Exactly.
40. He might have upped you, but
the I like Fort
Tier. Get the mean hand job.
I think I was thinking of Tennessee Ernie Ford.
Yeah,
I really was.
The thing I understand about Tennessee Williams is like he was very provocative, and like when you see a Tennessee Williams play now, it stirs you.
So I'll bring it back around and say everybody here has a love for the blues, right? There's a thing that goes all the way through Mississippi, and it goes even through Alabama and Tennessee, and even over into Norway. There's a Mississippi Blues Trail. There's a Mississippi Blues Trail marker right at the end of the block right here. This road right here that runs next to my apartment is called Catfish Alley, because back in the day, all of the black businesses, they would celebrate on weekends or certain parts of the month. They would get together and they'd have like catfish fries outside, and they invite the community to come out. So it's called Catfish Alley, and there's Mississippi Blues marker there that celelebrates like Booker White and several different blues musicians. So I think that's kind of cool.
I don't want to go back.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mississippi has a lot of great history. Yeah. We have a lot of shit history. I mean, probably more shitty history than we have. Yeah. I mean, exactly.
At least we can Alabama. We try to shit on Mississippi.
Yeah,
I mean, growing up in Alabama, it's like, well, at least you're 40, Mississippi.
You're the 49th worst. Yeah. I'm the 50th worst. You know, we come back and forth all the time for years, right? You know,
yeah. Used to be a competition, and
now it's like, okay, let's join together and get this going.
Now we're like the just whole United States against the rest of the world.
It seems to be that way, right?
Well, like honestly, it's weird how now it's like people are so caught off guard when we do anything progressive. And that's a thing I've been latching on to.
It's fucking sad. What? It's fucking sad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. Like,
I love it.
But you think the people in power aren't people our age. And granted, you're a hell of a lot younger than I am. But still, we're young people. And the people in power are still making the old school, old money decisions. You know, and so when anything progressive's done, it's typically done by somebody a little bit younger. So when that happens, it's like, what the fuck? You done fucked up the whole system.
I think progressive is just a thought pattern. It doesn't have anything to do with being old or young.
But progressive, I think, normal, is doing anything outside of the normal these days, especially for Mississippi and Alabama.
Normal, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I do too.
It's the way I was at least halfway raised, you know?
Like, yeah.
But like, one of my favorite things I've ever heard from being from the South, Ford's boss told him this. He was like, whenever you travel as a Southerner, people are going to assume a lot of things about you.
That's
and
right.
Use that to your advantage.
Yeah.
Because they're going to assume. I wish you were closer to the mic. I don't even know if that picked up.
No, what but, he was saying was he was like,
come on, Ford.
He was saying, not, he, was saying he was like, I made a comment about not being embarrassed of being Southern, but, you know, the accent thing is what we were talking about when it came up. And he's like, listen, man, he goes, you know, when you go outside of the state, you're a redneck. Remember that. And then he said something to the effect of, you know, let them underestimate you. That was the point.
We've all seen that movie.
Is that a movie?
I don't know.
I think son of a bitch.
He was quoting.
You said he was quoting an idiot.
He was quoting the Muppets.
I think that is just.
That's why he's still cutting grass.
I think that's just it, though. You know, because like any time I get outside of the South, and the moment you open your mouth, you give yourself away, right? It's like people immediately pick up on that, and then they immediately think downward toward you. And then, like, when you start to show your stuff, they're like, oh, damn, I underestimated this guy. You know, whether it's music or whether it's like,
welcome to being a woman. Yeah.
Hush. Whatever else, man. Let's go here. It's like, man, just
let's go here.
Is
what,
man,
part of that,
James? Just when you were like stepping out, like touring with Marcus, or like getting
Marcus
out.
Marcus is from the South too, though.
That's true.
If you want to hear like the first ever venture,
yes,
I had
out of the South.
I was 16. I somehow convinced my mother. I had this high school crush. Her name was Camille, and she was from Omaha, Nebraska. She moved to Troy, Alabama, because her mother started teaching dance at Troy University. And it was like the first time I ever heard The Cure. It's so weird because, like, you know, like, I was so attracted just to her personality, but not, like, it didn't, like, work. Work out.
You were totally in love with her.
I was in love with her personality.
Yeah.
And most of our growth towards that love was made through long distance phone calls. And then, like, I was like, I'm gonna go to Omaha for Christmas when I was 17.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom, I asked for that for Christmas, the plane ticket. And I got there, and immediately when she met me at the airport, I was just like, oh, like, this is like brother, sister. Like, and she felt the same. It all, like, we still talk. Like, everything's good. Like,
yeah.
But, like, nothing ever happened. But that was such a weird situation of, like, okay, well, I'm here, and let's make the best of it. And, like, her band was playing a show at this underground. Like, I thought, like, this is why I thought she was so cool, because none of this shit happened in Troy, Alabama.
Yeah.
And it was like, she's playing underground this, like, meat cellar or some shit. And it's like, yeah, we just play, like, punk rock shows. And then I show up, and I'm playing, like three original songs and, like, a Black Keys cover. Dan would love to hear this. Like I'm playing 10 Cent Pistol off of the Brothers record.
Which is a dope-ass record.
And, like a Hank Williams song. And, like, they're just, like...
It's not resonating at all.
They don't get it. Like, but also, I'm doing a shitty job of it. But it's my first out-of-town show. And, like, I remember, like, first showing up there and, like... Well, first of all, like, hanging out with this person, like... You know, she was smoking weed. She was 16, 17, just like I was. She was 34. she was my age, so, but like she was like hanging out and go to parties, and I was straight edge. Like I was raised Southern Baptist, and like nobody I knew was smoking weed or drinking, and I was kind of against
it, honestly.
An
introvert. Yeah. You were just thought that was
also,
an event,
I was introverted. Yeah. And like, but
are you
know,
still
like,
nerd? Yes.
Alcohol helps, but
thank God he's introverted right now because he doesn't have COVID.
I totally feel that. Like, like I want to finish this story, but there's something to be said there. Is like these Myers-Briggs tests. I've been encouraging like a lot of my friends to like take them because, like, it's just to that point. It's like you have, you know, this landscape of like personality, and it goes down to like 8 different things, and you'll either fall.
Are you talking about Myers-Briggs, or are you talking about Enneagram?
No, I'm talking about I'm not going Enneagram.
Okay.
We can
Enneagram
go
goes to 8.
But
yeah, no,
Myers-Briggs is like you either are introvert, extrovert, you're thinking or sensing, it's perception or judgment, and I'm blanking on the other one.
You did good. You did a good job. That
you did better than I could. Because I took it, but I don't remember. Enneagram, I know back and forth. But
ESTP.
I can't remember what I am.
I'm a
think I'm MRSP, whatever the market says.
Yeah.
We fucked.
I'm a gullible fucking too.
But my work let us take that test, and that literally changed the way that I gauge people because like
it helps.
If you would have
taken it before they told you could, you got in trouble for it.
No.
Why'd they let you take it?
No, because like we're trying to be a better company.
Oh, so you did like a team building thing.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay,
it's team building.
Okay. It's kind of like Cammy did.
It's no, like
I have a story about that, but I
it's like the best thing for us to do right now because like the company I work for is like just extremely hated by the community it represents, and for
because y'all cut people shit on and off.
That's true.
Prisons. You're in the prison business.
He's in the cutting off your shit if you don't pay your bill business.
Yeah.
Prison business.
And so, like, we started doing it, and, like, we had these, like, classes. And then, like, the crazy thing that they would do, we've had 3 so far, is, like, they would swap us up. And then one time, like, I was the only positive in the class, and, like, I was surrounded by, like, 7 other negatives. And I was
that's
like,
that's a lot to take on, though.
Yeah, and it was like just exposure to like the whole company because like we don't work together. Everybody has their own job,
but you're so
and everybody does
it.
Their own thing, right?
Yeah.
But then when you finally start meeting, it's like I put in this work order, and then you're sitting in the room with a guy that has to fill it, and he's like, man, fuck this shit, you know?
They're the ones that they need to go cut it off. Like, yes, you go cut it off.
Yeah.
And don't make me
and
have
so
to
And so we're all getting
person,
to know each other.
Like,
and I'm running a podcast and I'm interviewing people. And, like, with this personality, Myers-Briggs test is, like, I picked up on that in these classes. And, like, when you look at people one-on-one, there's a lot to learn from that. And you really learn how to gauge people, like, off the bat. It's like,
it cuts out so
are
much.
You an introvert?
Like years of bullshit.
Are
yeah.
you an introvert? Are you an extrovert? Are you judgmental? Or are you perceptive? Are you a sensor? Or are you a thinker? And I can't remember the other thing. That
God, but you're making it so far. You're doing
yeah,
such
I'm,
a good
I'm
job.
Yeah, I'm doing so good. But yeah. like, and like, that's really like, you know, base level, like.
Buyer or a seller?
That was I'm a buyer.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I'm a buyer and a seller. Damn it. But, like, the night we met, and we can tell the story, is like,
Topper.
Monk put me on you. Like, early James is like, you need to be listening to this. And then we were at the, it was B.B. Palmer, Taylor Honeycutt, and the Red Clay Strays at Avondale. And Abe invited me out, and I came out. And this is just an example of everything I just told. And,
baby, with that white trash lipstick, it looks mighty fine on me.
That's
unreal.
Yes. That is unreleased material.
Perfect.
But Alan has to do his, though. No.
And
that
like,
wasn't good. I can do better.
A good one. Everyone.
And, dude, I was just like, I was just getting to know your music, and I told Abe, I was, introduce me. Come on. And we walked over there, and like, this is the way I remember it.
Good piece.
Abe taps you. He said, James, this is my buddy Alan. He has a podcast. James, this is Alan. Alan, this is James. Y'all talk.
That's roughly how it went, I reckon.
For a deer, but for a deer, James did it for a deer, Abe. No, bullshit. Or just do it. Little snippet.
Come in on the mic.
Come on.
No. Come on, hey, Ford.
You already started it. Yeah.
Come on, Ford.
I'm just mad because I've listened to Abe's demos way too long.
I'll have to.
Yeah, that's why we have to. I'm the beer bitch. You mean?
But
I do need a beer.
I do it out of love because I think that dude.
I feel so needed.
A very unique thing going. I think he's got a great.
No, say what you said the other night.
That it's a good thing.
No. Huge respect, and I would like, I don't know how much you could open up about that, and I don't know y'all when it'll come out, but I know that y'all recently recorded together at El Elegante. Is there, what can be said about that?
Highly.
Sorry, I got woken up at 10 o'clock in the
morning. There you go.
And I was worried about the neighbors, and I was like, fuck, it's 10 o'clock.
Man, what is it? What was it?
First of all, meeting Abe, which I'm sure y'all have all had.
I've never met Abe.
He's great. And also, he needs his work.
I want to.
His work in the museum.
I told Alan that I'm going down there next time he goes down there.
Lady. Like, and I'm just saying this.
Oh, they're already on it. I mean, they're already hot on the sand.
Meeting Abe is I met Abe in Memphis. We had both kind of strangely been selected by our town as someone to push into this blues competition. Whereas, like,
you did the international blues?
Yeah.
Nice.
Nick Shoulders was at D's tonight.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry.
Nick Shoulders, shout out. Big fan of him.
Yeah, he's been on the show.
Hell yeah.
Huge fan. His cousin stayed at my house.
Don't nobody else quite whistle like Nick.
Ryan Brown is pretty close, but not quite.
It's good though, an unplug.
Anyways. I never once heard Abe set at this Memphis competition. He showed up to all of mine, which not a lot of people were in the crowd. So it kind of like, why is he showing up? Why, like,
yeah.
And he's already, even without hearing his music, it's almost like he's a performer as a speaker. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. He's a preacher. No. He's literally a preacher.
He's in the business of delivering knowledge. But, like...
You know, in all...
Opinions.
In all, like, trying to do my best Abe aside is like, dude, I can't tell you how much I love
Abe
that guy.
Dude, sucks, dude.
I'm going to get a
dude,
better
one. Like, I've never met the dude. I've just listened to his music, and I think... And I've watched, like, YouTube stuff. I could probably do better than you
did. Yeah, you need to really work on it.
Look,
I'm sorry.
Fuck y'all's couch.
Fuck y'all's couch.
Yeah, governments, man. Governments, man.
Hey, you just hit it.
Governments, man.
You just hit it.
He came up to me. I'm not sure what venue, like, and he was just like, "Man, I'm from Mobile. Like, I think he had a card at the time, which used to be a thing. I don't have a card anymore.
Yeah,
but like,
they look me up on Instagram.
You know, it's like, what Instagram?
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that? And. Looking back on it, I thought he was, honestly, I think I was completely correct about it. He must go to fucking snake churches and shit, and he's kooky as shit. And
oh,
it's,
yeah,
like,
it's like the hand jobs.
Yeah, like, I didn't miss a beat on his character. I was like, this is probably the weirdest person I've ever met. But it was almost kind of a... compliment, because I was like, nobody else there at this blue, because now in retrospect, me and him were there playing in a blues competition of original songs. You were discouraged to play covers. Did not keep hardly anyone from doing covers.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, like, me and Abe met there, and, like, I never saw a set, but, like, now having seen his set so many times, like...
It's unreal.
It's not, but it's also not blues at all.
No, it's
in
not.
My set, it's not blues at all.
No, it's but not.
It somehow is. We both exactly. ended up there.
Yeah, picked by your own city. Like,
but you know, both like, of y'all are...
Like, when y'all started talking about this, I thought... Because I've listened to Abe's music over and over. Like, how the fuck is most anything he does ever blues? Yours, now I can see the blues influence. Yeah. You use the slide and use the dobro, and there's a lot of, you know, there's some soul in there too. And but Abe,
I'd catch him on that first song, and then
soul. Yes, but I never would have ever pegged he would be picked by his town unless there's nobody else that does blues in that entire town, and he's the only talented person there. You know.
Yeah. Also,
picked?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Who picked you?
Not trying to bad.
Your mama.
My mama.
Your mama. No, this is Birmingham. This is the
Birmingham.
What organization?
Oh, so it wasn't Troy. It was Birmingham.
This is the Birmingham Blues Council and the Mobile Blue. Like, these all sound like made up councils to me, but apparently they exist.
It's a bunch of people, because there's some around here. It's just strongly. It's people who love the blues that all just come together, and they like call themselves a society,
like a
and they're all
it's
white.
Stuff like
that. Yeah. They are all white.
Yeah,
but
to man, me. It really does disturb me. I don't think there was a single black artist at the entire like competition, which is.
Are you making that up?
That's kind of
how...
Are
you making up... Are you...
No.
And that's probably
just
right. Because,
checking.
Like, I've been to, like, events like this.
Yeah.
And, like, he's right. It's like... Where's the representation? You know?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, if you really want to talk about that subject, like, the only people pushing blues... appreciation and keeping that genre going is not the people that created, which is African American people.
Mm-hmm.
Man, like, other than the proprietors that are still doing it to this day, that are in their 60s and 70s, or, you know, Gary Clark Jr., or, you know,
Grubbs is playing
or
blues.
even to go back even to like to like Terry Harmonica Bean and Super Chicken and people around Mississippi. Yeah. They don't have access. They don't know nothing about pushing. Nobody's asking them, hey, help us do this.
Well,
I don't think, you know?
You know, that was the thing about, like, Jimmy Doe Combs.
Super Chicken don't run his own Instagram account. You know, there's no Super Chicken Instagram
like,
account. Yeah. Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Unfortunately,
the
white community is appreciating blues a lot more than the black community.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And
that's
it's more of like,
a fact.
It's more of, yes,
and
definitely.
Certain,
it's more
like,
of like a historical thing. It's a preservation society kind of situation, in a sense.
Oh, gosh, you should see the 5 Points South. there's a really funny... I follow the 5 Points South Facebook group, and there was this guy that was, like, bitching about the blues music that was being played at his neighbor's house. And he was just, like... talking about it being out of tune. He's like, it's like the white guys over there playing the blues, and then somebody else was saying,
I think,
like,
it was actually like a blues community.
No, it was the Blues Society. It was the Birmingham Blues Society. And then he
it's
was
just
like,
6-year old white dudes playing the blues.
Yeah, but he
and
was,
she got an alert on her, like, neighborhood app, like,
yeah, but the best
white dudes playing the blues.
No, but he was a white
cancel,
dude too.
Cancel,
no,
cancel.
This is where it gets fucked up, is when he
there's
was
six
just
white
like,
alert, alert, alert.
No, is when he like, and this is literally the people that, I don't think it was actually all white dudes. I think it's actually the Blues Society in
There's
Birmingham.
There's one mixed guy.
Right.
And that made it cool.
And so, but then he was like, I don't know. I mean, like, maybe if it was bluegrass or something, and I was like, oh, fuck, dude. Like, if you want to listen to bluegrass, then I'm sorry. Like, if you're mad about the blues, and but you're into bluegrass, mm-hmm. if you would be better with a banjo playing in open G for fucking 4 hours straight, I don't know.
Does anyone know why the genre got called bluegrass?
No.
I have no clue. Do you?
Wait, what? What is it? What was the question? I can fix
it. Does it come from the Blue Ridge Mountains?
Bluegrass get called bluegrass?
Is it...
Because
of the Blue Ridge Mountains, maybe?
It could have been green grass.
Yeah,
you know?
Because...
It could have been red grass.
The
60s
era, it probably was.
Because there's the letters. There's the letters, and there's one for fives and the turkey six.
The keys.
You probably have to look back to the roots of Appalachia and going up to the Bluegrass Mountains,
Blue Ridge Mountains.
Bluegrass Mountains.
But there's grass. There is,
and maybe that has something to do with it.
I don't know.
I mean,
I've heard the phrase Kentucky bluegrass. I mean, that's I think it's a thing, and I think Bill Monroe's. From Kentucky, correct?
Yes.
Well, I think that might be.
Lean up, Ford. You're doing better. Yeah.
But
this couch will fucking suck you
in.
Oh
man!
Next thing you know, all we'll see is his fucking feet. He'd be like, "Why, mate?"
Next thing you know, it's like Ford would just be asleep.
He does what I do on this couch. Shit.
It's not our fault.
I wanted to ask you this. James is, you know, the night we met Justin Downs Earl Pass, and you made mention of him the night. And you were sharing a story with me earlier, and I wanted to have this on the record, is, man, just going back to Justin Towns, is that song you played tonight, what about it? Like, why is that Justin Towns Earl? I mean,
I used to play several of his songs, and I guess I stopped playing, you know, like you eventually hit that point where you're like, you're covering too much of an artist that clearly sounds like you. So eventually you just stop playing the songs that sound like the songs you created. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of what Justin Towns Earl was for me. And same with, you know, like, countless others, but like, you know, Dan as well, like Black Keys, like I had to like stop covering people's music because the songs that I would cover sounded so much like my originals, and they did kind of morph into originals. Mm-hmm. But I remember waking up, I've had very few of these like surprise emails where I woke up, because normally I wake up around 1 or 12, like, you know, PM. Especially back then.
Honestly.
And it's just like, I remember waking up and seeing that I had been confirmed to open for Justin Towns Earl, and I think the first show was at Callahan's in Mobile.
Nice. Good plug.
And
Black and Trent Po' Boy.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong.
Just the whole vibe.
Oh, yeah, and the owner, his name...
JT.
He does such
John
a good
Thompson.
Job.
Yeah.
He does such a great job of taking care of the people he brings in.
He does.
Big old
he
dick.
Takes care
Big,
of bands.
Big, giant dick. Great
yeah.
dick.
He's
seen
it
many times.
Wow. Just, it's just marvelous.
He will.
You earn yourself.
All the lube.
No.
No. Oh, get the lube out.
Your situation is different than mine.
Yeah.
But
whatever you're into.
Showing up there in like.
Right, Leprechaun. Shout out. Sorry, you gotta be from my building now.
That's true.
Mardi I was girl. Living it. I was
it's
living
Mardi
in
Mardi Gras right now, and I just want to die.
I was living in Mobile when that leprechaun bullshit came out, and I thought that was just the dopest thing that happened. But
so
let's
good,
get back. Let's get back.
I'm in trouble already. So
you're in the hog house. James, I'm sorry.
Moment's gone.
Oh, fuck.
Justin Towns Earl.
Nah. So that was the first show we did with him, and I was just like so shaky, like talking to him, smoking a cigarette next to him. And
was he
like,
starstruck?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, like had watched countless videos and had tried to sound like he did on playing his songs, and like because I covered it. So many of them, and like, and just getting this gig was just a fucking dream. And you know, like him, I remember that night, like him just being like, you know, I thought he was sober at that point, but sober to him meant beers and weed. Which I count that as sober, personally. That's kind of my regimen. Sure. But, like, you know, like, he was like, I just remember him asking me where he could get some weed, and I didn't know because I'm not from Mobile, but, like, it was just, like, such a weird situation to be plugged into because I wanted so hard to score a gram for Justin Telltale.
Yeah.
But I was also so excited because, you know, I knew about his past history and I was like, good, he's just drinking beer and smoking weed. Like, that's safe. And then we played another gig. I can't really remember where, but I know the third gig I ever. The last gig I ever played with him was at Standard Deluxe, and that one he played with a drummer, and I also remember him just like being kind of thrown off by the fact that he was opening for a punk rock band. I can't even remember what tour he was on. They're a very well-known, like, punk rock group, and not at all, like, what Justin Towns Earl's music sounded like.
New Devils?
No. And, he was, like, weirdly soliciting me for advice. And I was like,
advice
"How
for,
weird is this?"
Advice for what?
Electric guitar, because he was going to be playing with the trio. He wasn't going to change any of his music. He just wanted to play with an electric guitar through an amp. And I was like, because we both work with Recording King, and they also own the Lore. So I was like, man, get like an arch top with that P90 in it and like put 13 gauge strings on it. And I was like, what am I doing right now? I'm offering gear advice to my hero.
Yeah.
Cause he's never played electric.
Yeah.
He never has. Yeah. And I couldn't believe he hadn't cause I had copied everything from him and it incorporated like acoustic to how I play electric as well. And he was just like, I was like, maybe not 12s, maybe not 13s, but 12s. Like, and it's still going to feel like your acoustic, but like, because I play just like him. So I was like, don't, you know, you're going to hear that pop when you hit the, because he famously was super percussive when he played rhythm. But he, like, that's how he played guitar. Like, you couldn't get away from it. And I just remember, like, sitting there, like, telling him, like, what to tell Recording King to order, like...
That is so wild.
And that was at Callahan's, the first night I met him. And then we played one other game. I don't remember the second one. But of course you remember the first one and the last one.
Yeah.
The last time he played with the drummer and he was still acoustic and he was getting ready. And I remember me and Adrian getting ready to leave Standard Deluxe in Waverly, and we're getting ready to leave. And I don't really expect anything from Justin. I don't expect anything because we don't have any more tour dates together. And I've always felt so weird in his stead, like, after he passed, to say anything about it, because it would seem like I was like, oh, you know, I had this unique interaction with him, and, blah, blah, blah. I felt like I would be, inviting attention on myself. That's because right. Someone left this earth. No, it was very special to me, and I'll always remember it. And he just, I was like, hey, man, I was talking to, just, trying to leave, because we had had, you know, plenty to drink, and it was like, we can't drink too much more, and I'm telling everybody bye, and I don't expect Justin to get up, and he does, and he walks over and he hugs me, and he was like, yeah, man, please keep doing what you're doing, and if you don't, I'm gonna come and find you. And you know, I'm sure he said that to countless other openers, but to me that meant everything.
Yeah,
I don't know if he ever said that to other folks. I'm sure he did, but,
does that do anything to you now? When you play? I mean, just that there's a bit of cloud around it, right? A guy that you grew up replicating?
I certainly feel like a certain need to carry on, not a lot of people play like he played, not a lot of people sing the songs like he sang. He never meant for me to be a torchbearer in any right, but I guess in a lot of ways, proclaim myself as a certain torchbearer for the way he played guitar. His attitude towards music and also towards the art itself. He knew he was, just knowing the guy, he fucking knew he wasn't going to be on this earth long.
That's right.
I fully believe he didn't think he was going to be on this earth long.
The night he passed, we were together, and lo and behold, I was stunned. I was stumped, but I wasn't surprised.
Probably anybody was.
Yeah, that's how
sad.
He was literally
a lot of personal friends.
He was a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, and it's just, he's like one of those guys. He's like, I will not compare him to anyone because it's just stupid. But anyone on this earth that you see create art in a hurry, it's like, oh yeah.
They're making their way out.
They're already on the way. And no one decided that venture for them.
That's right.
They didn't. Well, they kind of did, but, they probably didn't have any say in it. It's just fucking happens that way.
I was glad to see his dad not busted up, but I mean, I kind of always heard that they didn't have a
great relationship.
And I was, you know, like Steve Earle does a podcast, well, not a, he does a YouTube where he shows guitars in his collection, and he does one of these like every week, and he did one like I think the day after his son had just died. And he's like, I have to do this. You know,
who wouldn't do that though?
Has he put out the record yet?
Yeah,
he has already.
Yeah, I've heard a single. Maybe.
Yeah, I've not heard it yet. So I heard it was going to happen. But
what I'm saying is, I'm just glad to see his dad. I mean, I don't need to listen about it. I'm just glad to see he took it so hard because, you know,
Ford, while I got you.
While you're not sleeping on the fucking couch over there.
Man, I'm always so impressed with your ability on the slide still. And then to see you pick up the mandolin and to pick up the guitar. Ford, what else are you not telling me?
He's racist.
Plays the skin flute.
Pretty good at that. I've been for you. I make good gumbo.
Okay. Wait, what? This is new really information.
And
we were just talking.
He came to Columbus empty-handed.
Why did you say gumbo?
What else? I enjoy cooking.
Long walks on the beach.
All right.
That's kind of been my game. It's always been to sort of play a bunch of instruments, maybe not the best, but be able to do a little bit of everything.
You know, we were, you know, I
never
asked you about
benefited the mandolin. Me until tonight.
I asked you about the mandolin after the show this evening, and it was quite remarkable to me. Like when you plugged your plug for why you play the way you play. And it was also like detrimental to you actually getting into the scene you originally picked up the mandolin for.
Right.
So, let's talk a little bit about that.
And what do you mean?
Like, why did you pick up the mandolin? Who was that guy?
REM, Losing My Religion, right?
No, absolutely not.
Damn.
I left REM at Fables.
There you go. Right on.
That's the truth. But anyway, Lester Newby would be. I know. Hey, Les. He won't listen.
Les don't listen to anything.
He didn't even listen. He recorded it. I did the whole jam band thing in the 90s.
What?
Badly.
Lord.
Oh, this is new.
Lord of Jesus.
We would never.
We had a bluegrass together. Background.
And then from there, you know, listening to like, always listening to different things. But there was, I'm a big public radio listener and
nerd.
There's a show on the Tuscaloosa station. I think it's Bama Bluegrass. And I can't remember the guy. But anyway, I started listening to it. And I was coming home from fishing one night.
You should listen to that show on the way home.
I was like, shit, this music's like rhythmic. It's like, it's good, and I'm not even high, or I'm not drunk, but this is really good. It's the first time I'd listened to it.
It's wild to say that sober, too, right?
Yeah, so after that, I kind of started, you know, I listened to The Grateful Dead, and then, you know, of course, listening to Jerry. We get into, like, different offshoots of The Grateful Dead, and one of them was Olden in the Way, and that was my introduction to bluegrass, and I just kind of jumped on the mandolin. So I bought a mandolin for $60 from this little old lady in Eclectic, Alabama.
Yeah.
Subtly fitting.
Yeah. Eclectic. On the way out, she's like, God bless you, son. I was like, my friend has it. But yeah, so I just kind of taught myself to play
it. She didn't keep it then. You told her you would. You didn't keep the mandolin.
He's a famous liar.
It's in the family. I can go get it.
Technically.
You go get it.
But I never really latched on to... I never was able to play bluegrass correctly, so I kind of bastardized it. And then I got into, like, blues.
Ford, we're a bluegrass band. I don't know if you
told
me.
According to my mother.
And then I was telling you earlier, Mississippi musician. I got real into Jimbo Mathis's Knockdown Society.
Yes.
Nice. Playing,
specifically,
Jimbo
he's
is
playing next week or something.
No, he's playing
next
in,
month or something.
I mean,
April.
I heard the squirrel on the zippers, and I knew kind of that. That, but when I heard that Knockdown, I think it was called Play Stones, the Play Songs for Rosetta, and I was like, whatever they were doing, I think it was the guys from Mississippi All Stars.
Mm-hmm.
One of them's playing the man. It might be the guitar player. One of them's playing the mandolin. Miss Luther, I think, playing the mandolin. And it's just raw and nasty, and that's kind of what I gravitated towards with the mammal. And I just pushed
nasty
that. I started the band.
And not even dirty nasty.
We took that Play Songs for Rosetta, and I started a little three-piece band. Well, I didn't start it, but I got some guys who were like-minded, and we finger-picked guitar, upright bass, and I was playing blues mammal.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I do.
I tell you, check out Andrew Bird. And
yeah.
Jimbo just put out a new record.
I've seen the video.
Fucking phenomenal.
I think it's cool
Andrew Bird
is so way
up
there.
Blows my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's cool that he's so way up there musically, Andrew Bird.
Yeah.
And not that he's, you know, bringing it down a level by playing again with, you know Mathis, because Jimbo does his thing.
Yeah, really great. Yeah, sure.
But I just think it's cool that he, you know, can come back to that thing that he kind of started. I think it was Andrew Bird's Bowl of Fire.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool they did that.
Like, I never realized in my brain that Andrew Bird was a part of Squirrel Nut Zippers at some point.
Yeah, at some point.
And so, because Jimbo Mathis is playing the Arts Council in Columbus on April 20 whatever.
That's what the Danny's get compared to.
And so
really?
so I have a I get a phone call one day from Jimbo Mathis, and he's telling me, because we're rescheduling the gig because of COVID. This was back in the day. He's like, well, I'm in Los Angeles right now with Andrew Bird. We're cutting a record. And I'm like, my brain just awesome. Like goes, what the fuck? I just melt for a minute. I'm like, Andrew Bird and Jimbo Mathis are cutting a record together? But when I heard it, I was even more amazed, because I didn't expect it to be as great as it was, because of there's like two different realms of what they're doing, you know. And when they came together, it just made this fucking perfect thing. And we were talking about bluegrass and people coming around to bluegrass. I've always loved bluegrass, but I think some of the progress, like, and there are a million bluegrass cover songs, but I think one of the songs that really made me understand bluegrass and the way it coincides with today's youth is Chris Thiele what was his band?
Oh, you're talking about Styles.
Several bands.
Yeah, but he did
Nickel Creek,
there you go. Yeah, he did a cover
Punch
of...
Punch Brothers?
Yes.
Yeah.
He did a cover on his solo record of Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground from the White Stripes. That right there is one of the most perfect fucking bluegrass songs ever in the world.
Nirvana's...
Oh my God, it was amazing.
Mine was Nirvana's, like, when he... Well, it was a Lead Belly song, In the Pines.
Yeah, In the Pines,
yeah. And then
there's
a bluegrass version.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so the first time I heard...
Which is the original song, I think, was called Black Girl.
Yeah, you can't say that.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, the Lead Belly song.
Yeah, which makes more sense. But in my mind, it was already a murder ballad. I don't know. Like, but the first time I heard that played in a bluegrass setting, I was like, oh, that's... Because I knew from Nirvana, because he's like the Lead Belly song. And then I was like, I know the words to this. This speaks to me. But then I was like, they're fucking the words up. And then I was like, oh, wait, maybe that's... It's very confusing.
But one of the things about bluegrass that I don't like is...
There's so many things.
Well, I live with a banjo.
Nobody really likes jazz. It's not bluegrass. Everybody likes bluegrass.
He's a phenomenal banjo player. Fuck a band.
Who are you talking about?
Patrick. Hey, Patrick.
Well, no.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, the thing about bluegrass is they tend to be a little...
Well, in the religion.
Up.
Yeah.
It got turned into a, because bluegrass players do all the cocaine. Strugs
didn't do it that way.
They were doing all the, like, you have to.
J.D. Wilkes don't do it that way.
But I was telling y'all about that.
I grew up listening to rap music. I'm sorry.
And we would play.
Nobody knows J.D. Wilkes.
And we played with like Claire Lynch. I mean, we didn't play with her. We played in the same festival. And I can remember her looking at us because we would do like old blues covers, you know, like 20s and 30s, Bo Carter, Martin Bogan and Armstrong, John Hurt. And we would do it in that. And they would look, the bluegrassers would look, we'd be at these bluegrass festivals.
Like, it's so serious. I know. Like, it's so fucking serious.
We're playing songs about dicks. You know, my pencil don't write no more. I mean, it's about Carter. Yeah. And, you know, I remember specifically this little old lady looking, we were playing at this festival, this little old lady stood up and looked at us like we were just disgusting.
Oh, no.
And then other little ladies are like nudging their husband because, like, my pencil don't write no more.
Yeah.
You
know, no,
and she gets up and looks at us like, you know, y'all going to hell.
One of the, well, like, the maybe three at the Horsepens gigs, like, when we had Rude and True, Rebecca and Eglin and AJ Cuffey, like,
which is phenomenal.
And he's a percussionist. Like, you can't even call him a drummer. He's like, No. Alan Tolbert, who was like the freaking king of bluegrass. I can't even say fucking, because, like, he's like the freaking king of bluegrass in Alabama. Like, he loved it. He loved it.
Alan Tolbert is just about as good at flat picking bluegrass.
We had like
as you can get.
Yeah, I've but we like
you can't ask. You can't
had
ask for a better
people
flat
leave.
Guitar player.
We had people leave because there was a percussionist. And they didn't want to hear that oogity boogity music at a bluegrass festival, and Horsepens was straight all right, like
you're getting to a point that the owner
like because I'm you know book and they were just like you know and I was like well it's good music like and this is what we did and they were just like we don't need those peanut butter and jelly eaters
we would get gigs.
You know and it's just, I was just so proud of the fact that they were like okay with the it's like this is good music you know like if these people have a problem the fact that those were these people right. The people that left because they were oogity boogity music
right.
Were finally these people you know they're the ones with the problem like
exactly.
They're leaving they're you know like that's fine like
we,
it's just crazy.
Well the one of the things that I thought when I think about was be like well I mean we are three lame white guys playing stringed instruments, so we do fit in with the bluegrass crowd, you know. It's just, you know, we're not. And the thing that we always used to say is, oh, they think we're a bluegrass band because they thought we were a bluegrass band because of our instrumentation.
Well, you can slip so much shit in. You can just slip it in. It's like.
But the thing that they didn't get was we were actually pretty true to what we were trying to do. They just thought we were getting it wrong. You know, they thought we weren't good. Because we weren't doing it the way they were. And
I think that's what's so frustrating.
But I still love to listen.
That's what's so freeing about like what we do as a four-piece. Because when we were a duo, just me and Adrian, people, you know, it's folk, it's bluegrass, whatever. And like, as soon as someone can't nail down the genre you play.
You throw an Americana or bluegrass.
It's like you're Americana, which is
it's such a broad
that's like,
fucking
that's our
umbrella.
Fucking,
and
that's our bio on our Instagram.
She's steel.
People call us Americana, which Americana from Birmingham, Alabama. We steal from everyone. Some people call that
No, you're always at it.
Rock band from Birmingham, Alabama. We steal from everyone. Right. Some people call that Americana. That's our bio. And I came up with that. Because I was just so tired of, like, because once I was watching Corey Wong in the Wong Notes. He's got this badass show that he's Corey Wong, of course, the guitar player from Wolfpack, and he's got this weird talk show.
That's a weird fucking band, but a good, great fucking band though.
It's a good plug. Yeah.
And he's great awesome. Because he is like the first episode he ever did. He was like, they introduced him as the host, and it was like professional rhythm lead guitar player. Because he never plays lead. He's just, like, really good at rhythm.
Yeah.
Which is something that I always thought I was good at, rather than lead playing, was, like...
But you do so many things.
It was so weird. Corey Wong things. Plays with a pick.
Two.
Sort of wish that I could keep clean, and the kind of sort of way that I used to be. It's a childlike belief in time's been the faith all along, and that's the view from this high horse I'm on. Dream, it seems, of just passing the time. Too much nicotine, caffeine, and wine. With my milk mustache shaved, things I once craved make me own. And that's the view from this high horse I'm on. I can't remember the last time that I climbed a tree. Now when I am high, there ain't much that I wanna see.
That's going to wrap up part one. Listen to part two.